Hello, and welcome to a roundtable discussion on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I'm joined by guests for a lively conversation on a topic we hope you'll find interesting. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we are talking about book two of the Genesis Fleet trilogy, which is part of the Lost Fleet universe. This is Ascendant, is the title of this book. And it takes place 2-3 years after Vanguard?
3 years.
3 years after Vanguard. Things have changed in those couple of star systems, and the aggressors from the last book have pretty much blockaded the two main star systems we're dealing with.
And they've joined forces. It's no longer just Upulu is a bad guy, just Turin might be a bad guy, just Skatha is definitely a bad guy. The three have joined forces.
Yes, they're clearly going up in organized opposition. And there are the preludes of an agreement with Glenn Lyon and...
Kosaka,
of we ought to be friendly and help each other, but they haven't really formalized that yet. They're still figuring out the wording and such. It's only been 3 years, so
yeah.
Go figure.
Well, and at one point when Glenn Lyon's ship is in the right place to help Kosaka, there's this whole thing going on of Rob Gary's been told he can't put his ship under the command of anyone else. The other side's been told they can't put their ship under the command of anyone else.
There's no clear chain of command. So you've got two ships that have similar goals and agendas, but just different enough. One can't risk their ship because they've got to get back home to protect it. The other has to do whatever they can because it's their home star system.
Yeah.
And figuring out how to coordinate that.
Well, and that ended up being the key word, coordinate.
Mm-hmm. Not order the other ship to do something, but explain what you're doing and why in enough time that you can suggest the other person do this, and here's why.
Well, and Mele Darcy referred to it as dancing together.
Yes. Neither leading, but neither just blindly following either.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because we've gotten a lot of ship combat in the previous books, but certainly in the original set of books for Lost Fleet, it was fleet combat.
Definitely.
Where you had, you know, 4 or 5 subgroups of the fleet, each of which had like 20 ships or something.
You had formations.
Yes, formations and coordination of those, etc. Whereas here, you've got like 2, maybe 3 ships on each side. It gets bigger when you get some of the smaller, you know, support crafts or whatever, the shuttles and things like that. But it's a much different scale. Likewise, when the Marines have to hold down this orbital base as one of the ships is getting repaired, there's 6 Marines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's like 80 or so volunteers.
Local militia,
yeah. But it's a very different scale.
Well, but they quickly size up who from the local militia got sent up to the orbital facility.
And why?
Yeah, it's not the best and the brightest.
Yes, it's we need people, and these are the ones we could do without because it's kind of a suicide mission.
Yeah.
So we got some good action, certainly for Mele Darcy, Rob Gary.
Well, and right up at the beginning of the book, we find out what happened with Commodore Hopkins. Why the Earth Fleet ship that we've hired was destroyed.
Yes, yes. They've got their checklists, and they got 2 checklists that were competing, one saying go, one saying stay, and they're like, well, what do I do?
And they phrase it as he was relieved when the other ship fired on them, and basically he knew it was going to destroy him, and he had to call for abandoned ship.
Yeah, when the checklist basically said you can either stay or you can go, and, oh, never mind, just get the hell off the ship, it's gone.
Yeah, and he was relieved to no longer have to choose between the diametrically opposed options, but he was frozen by the checklist say go in opposite directions.
Well, and there was a bit of a discussion throughout the book on, so you've got to have the ability to think for yourself, but there's also times where having those checklists for things you're either going to forget about, or there's a reason for those checklists. There's a safety protocol or something.
Well, and that's how he chooses his XO.
Mm-hmm.
The person who knows when to stick to the checklist and when to get the job done.
Yes. That following the checklist isn't the goal, but there are times where the checklists are not a bad thing.
Well, and they phrase it at one point of the goal in Earthfleet was to follow the checklist.
Yes, if you checked everything, all the boxes, you succeeded whether you died or not.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a bizarre thing, but it's also a bit of a comment on kind of corporate bureaucracy at times, where this is the way the company does stuff, so that's the way you got to do it, whether it makes any sense or not.
Mm-hmm.
So having a little bit of both sides, but very much a blindly following the checklist will get you killed.
Yeah.
Made sense. So getting some insight into that was good.
Now, the character we never went back to was the ground forces leader on Glen Lyon, who didn't want to give Darcy the best possible people to join her Marines. It was, I was told I had to let 20 people volunteer. I wasn't told I had to let you cherry pick my forces.
Yes, we never got back to that. I would expect we'd get that next time.
Well, and part of why I wanted to go back to that character was when we had that first meeting with the council of, okay, who's going to do what, basically, and we have Darcy, Gary, and this ground forces person, the council is basically saying they don't feel obligated to pay the medical bills, etc., on
yes.
the Claymore crew. And Gary steps up and says, that was a failure of leadership,
mm-hmm.
not a failure of the crew. And basically throws the Commodore under the bus. And the ground forces person pulls him aside and basically says, I'd be careful who you go throwing under the bus. And doesn't seem to recognize, yeah, okay, it was a dead man he threw under the bus, and whether or not he knew if it was fairly or unfairly, he did what it took to get those people medical care, to make sure that they could get jobs when they got back. He stood up for those people.
More than that, it's setting the precedent, because it's hard to get volunteers or people enlisted in your military and stuff if they know they're going to get injured and then cast aside with no coverage.
Yes. Yes.
So there's a certain, the ground forces guy should have realized.
Yes.
You want ground forces, you need to take care of your people.
Exactly. Exactly. Whereas the ground forces person was more concerned with the reputation of the dead Commodore.
Yeah, if people don't feel taken care of, they will leave. And for a military situation, you want the people that are the best and the brightest and feel they're taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah, I expect that ground forces guy to come back next book. Because it sounds like next book the fighting is going to be more local at Glen Lyon versus remote. And I expect that guy to have to work with the Marines. And we're also seeing where the Space Force does not leave the Marines.
Yes.
And stuff like that. The Marines know they've got their backs covered. And a lot of the things that were just kind of taken for granted in the other books, it's just this is the way it is.
Yeah.
So again, seeing that formation of that stuff.
Yeah.
Makes
we
sense.
Didn't get much Ninja.
No, she's been more supporting cast and almost in the framing sequences, if you will,
yeah,
than I had expected. And I'm a little disappointed with that. I think it's a good character.
Mm-hmm.
But I expect next time, since they're going to be staying more centralized, that we may get more of her.
Yeah.
We got a lot more of Dominic Desjani.
Yes.
And Carmen Ochoa. I did think it was funny at one point when they're talking about having kids, and it's like, well, the girls can be Desjani's, the boys can be Ochoa's or something.
Yeah.
The other character we got introduced this book was Freya Morgan.
Yes.
Now, what was most interesting to me is she has a brother.
Yes.
The brother seemed to go over to what will become Syndicate Space.
Yes.
And, of course, Morgan was one of the lieutenants of
Dracon.
Dracon in The Lost Stars. And this Morgan, of course, has very similar skill set.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like skill sets are a little genetic in this world.
Yes, yes.
You know, every Gary we've seen is pretty good at space combat.
And thinking.
And a few steps ahead, and not blind to what had gone before in terms of ways of thinking, but not slave to them either.
Mm-hmm.
So I can definitely see some similarities, personality traits that
I'd
are similar.
Also say willing to listen.
Yes, absolutely. Seeking advice.
Yeah. Because there were a couple times when somebody on the bridge spoke up, if we were doing this according to Earthfleet checklists, when this would happen.
Well, and with that particular conversation, he realized going by the checklist would make the enemy think you're blindly going by the checklist, So when you're setting up a late minute swerve or whatever, if you do everything else by the book, there's no reason to think you won't, for them to think you won't the entire time.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good. And again, we saw similar stuff with Blackjack Gary in the Lost Fleet and Beyond the Frontier books. So I could definitely see some parallels that are being set up. And it's the same author. So after, this is what, our 16th novel with this author?
Yeah.
The breath they didn't know they were holding.
Yeah.
There's a couple of phrases that are just, it's not that they're overused, because it'd be once a book or something
no,
like that.
No, but you get used to it. What I found in this book happened an awful lot was the transition between perspectives, if you will, would be Lachlan would be thinking, well, at least Melee's got to be safe back on Glen Lyon.
Cut to her not being safe over on wherever. Yeah,
yes.
I did notice those sort of transition aspects. And that's, I'm going to say, a bit cinematic.
Yes.
Because we'll see that sort of a thing on TV or movies or something.
Yeah, well, and it was very much the camera pans to something and cuts to something that looks just like it and pans away. Yeah.
That kind of feeling, yeah, yeah. It's definitely a narrative transition, and versus just being a bam, suddenly we're somewhere else, it's setting us up for that. And there are things you can do in a prose novel of so-and-so thinking of so-and-so.
Well, and it was a reminder of which characters knew which characters.
Yes, because we had a couple of different threads that never totally crossed this book. The negotiator lock-in and stuff was getting off of Kosaka through the ships, and those characters, I think, never physically interacted with Gary's group coming in after the fact.
The closest they did, they saw them, and then the freighter, the Bruce Monroe, was a go-between, because Gary was basically escorting the freighter.
Yeah. There was, you could see where the ships passed in the night, so to speak.
Yeah.
But, again, some of these characters still haven't met. But because they've got the connection from the last book,
Lachlan has sent a message to Gary, but they haven't met yet.
Yeah. Whereas before, in the first book, there were a couple where, okay, Gary had met Melee after Melee had met Lachlan and stuff like that. So there was a bit more
dominoes
and I almost want to say a physical chain of contact.
Yeah.
Whereas here, there was less of a need of it because they'd established everything. But also what seemed like kind of the main plot with Gary and stuff and almost that subplot with Lachlan and those characters.
Yeah.
So, and again, not a problem with that, but it was interesting when and where the author chose to cut between various parts of action of, okay, Melee and Rob, Gary, have split, one's maintaining the base, the other's maintaining the fight or whatever, so that's something to cut against. And then you can also cut back, too.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we never really cut back to Glen Lyon,
mm-mm,
much like we never really cut back to the fleet in the earlier, you know, fleet command in the other books.
Yeah.
So a lot happened here. We got some ground fighting that reminded me of some of the stuff from the Lost Stars books.
Mm-hmm.
We got some of the orbital fighting that reminded me of some of the stuff from the Lost Fleet and Beyond the Frontier. Not in any way where it felt like, oh, geez, they're doing that again.
Yeah.
But you could see, again, it's like watching a series of World War II stories or something like that. There are going to be certain recurring things that just happen in that kind of a war.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was good. I'm trying to think if there are any other things that particularly jumped out at me. Again, that alliance between the stars of Apu, Skatha, and Turin, as you had mentioned.
Well, and speculating when a bunch of last-minute shuttles went from that fleet down to Kosaka, of basically who was on those shuttles. Was that the high brass, or
was the brass going down to lead the fighting on the ground, or were they on the freighter getting the hell out of Dodge?
Yeah.
So we'd gotten mention of Danny, the daughter of Ninja, and Rob Gary. It was interesting, because apparently Danny refused to answer to anything but Little Ninja ever since Melee Darcy had called her that at one point, and I think that was just funny.
Well, I liked both that she was clearly named for Danielle Martell,
mm-hmm,
but also just the Little Ninja was adorable.
Well, and the fact it was a girl, we knew there had to be a boy, so the name could continue. And,
yes,
of course, Ninja's expecting again. But it also seems like Gary's coming in pairs.
Yeah.
because Blackjack had a brother, so they could have the great grand nephew and niece or whatever, and those two were
yes.
siblings and such. So I thought that was interesting. And also the mention that our kids will probably inherit your sense of duty and idealism someday.
Yes.
Kind of a certain amount of these things are genetic, it feels like. There were a ton of characters in this, and it was to be expected because we had the Marines to get a couple of. We had a couple of more people on Gary's ship. We had the locals he was working with in that star system. We had the militia people. So there was a lot kind of going around, plus everything that was going on the shuttle and stuff with Locken and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, ton of characters, some more major than others, obviously, and enough of the politics of the council members and stuff like that to do it. I did think it was funny early in the book when one of the council members was trying to convince Rob, hey, we need you. We'll make you captain. We'll try to do right by you this time. And he's like, oh, Ninja wasn't that bad. Say, oh, I guess it's coincidence then that my door locks keep randomly changing on a regular basis.
Yes, yes.
So, yeah, I'll talk to Ninja about that.
Yeah.
And then there was some aspect with the ground forces and Darcy on what's the Marine uniform going to look like? Is there even a Marine uniform? And again, the fighting for jockeying for position.
Well, yeah, who would the Marines report to?
Yeah, and the fact it was clearly Gary just made sense.
Yeah, but also ground forces didn't want the Marines to even exist.
Yeah. Well, and there was also a comment at one point where Gary was going to do something and he was warned, you may lose your command. It's like, yeah, last time I did that, it's because I won.
Yes.
Kind of a, that's a given, almost.
Yeah.
Was funny.
Well, and Gary had a great speech to the former Earth Fleet people serving under him of basically, you've got to decide, are you still former Earth Fleet people or are you Glen Lyon people?
Is this now your home that you're willing to fight for on those grounds or is this just a job?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was a little bit of that with Carmen Ochoa over on Kosatka. I didn't come here to immigrate to Kosatka and for this to be a place that I would never leave, that I would always fight for.
Well, but also not wanting the bad aspects of Mars to follow her here.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think there was an interesting version of this book that could have been done where Darcy and Gary, because of how they'd been treated after the last ones, didn't initially fight and had to do it with even less resources.
Mm, yeah.
Kind of, they're now a rebellion within.
That's what I was thinking, yeah.
There was also mention in this book of the lights in jump space.
Yes.
And just starting to be seen and stuff like that.
And gradually increasing.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if we get a little more explanation of that next time. Not enough to understand them, but to follow up on the they weren't there, now they are.
Yeah. I keep thinking Apulu, Skeda, and Turin are going to end up being part of the Syndicate worlds. Because
oh, absolutely.
Like, they were claiming it was a humanitarian mission.
Yes, I caught that line, too. I caught that line and highlighted that as I went through. Humanitarianism, how long have wolves been wrapping themselves in that form of sheep's clothing?
Yeah.
So, we had quite a bit going on, and also an aspect of a lot of people doing what they were doing because they had to, not just to survive, but to create the world they wanted their kids to grow up in.
Yes. And they were very aware of that. They were aware of the precedents they were setting.
Yes. And in some cases, they were not aware, I don't want to say of the precedents they were setting, but like ninjas starting to believe in the ancestors and stuff like that. And something that became a big deal in the fleet ships later in the previous books, where there was a worship area to go sit with your ancestors and stuff like that. So setting the seeds for this, I appreciate. And again, it means more having read the other books.
Definitely.
But even without having read the other books, you can see where things are forming.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Hoffer who was sending messages to Gary. I think it was him. Where it was ending with a line about the ancestors.
Yeah. Yeah. There's certain things where they haven't gotten to the for our ancestors, either in the meaningful sense or the off the rote manner that the Syndic world had. So they hadn't
developed. Well, the Syndicore was for the people in the Rotemare.
For the people. That's right. That's right. And it was late in the book that we found out that Freya's brother had gone far out. And who knows if we'll ever see him again. Again, setting the seeds of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was some stuff at the end of, you know, what if Little Ninja decides to become a Marine or the son decides to join the fleet? And, you know, it's not like this is a long tradition in our families of military service, but, you know, we gotta make it right if it is.
Yeah, exactly.
So there was a lot of aspects of the author knowing what he had written before that comes later. And this isn't telegraphing that, but you can see some echoes.
Yeah.
In a few cases, oh, that'll never happen. In a couple of cases, well, it might.
Yes.
So I thought this was good. This was mainly a battle. There were fewer battles, it feels like, in this book, because, again, smaller scale.
Well, but there was also allusion to combat, as opposed to being in the thick of combat. We knew Gary fought for 24 hours.
Yes, there's some parts that they kind of, I don't want to say gloss over, but we don't need the ins and outs of all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And also a fair amount of the day or two that Darcy had to hold the outpost.
Yeah.
It's suddenly, you know, 18 hours later or something.
Well, but with that, there was the great comment from the militia leader of, don't set any explosives you brought with you.
Well, don't set any explosives, and implying you brought it. So none of the stuff we brought. She clarified it for him to walk him into the, well, if we find it here, we can blow it up. I thought the use of the grain and stuff was interesting. The use of the lifeboat in this book by Freya was well done. That seemed like a bit of work.
Yes. It took two people.
It did. But you can start to see how things are both mirroring other books, but also the stakes they're playing at are bigger because the scale is smaller.
Yeah.
You know, if you lose the one planet, that's all you got.
Yeah.
You know, whereas in some of the other books, entire systems were wiped out, and it was tragic, but that's not your only system.
Yes.
So I'm wondering where they're going to go in the next book.
I'm wondering if there's going to be another time jump, 2 or 3 years.
I would kind of expect that, and I would kind of expect it to be a flip or a cross between they've got to stay home and protect the homeworld, or they've finally got to go push the others back.
I'm also wondering if Locken and Bridget are going to be a couple in the next book.
I would think so.
That seems to be what's happening with this series. During the off-screen time is when the couples are magically coming together.
Well, and we've also got the line of, you two are a couple, you just don't know it yet.
Yes.
And that's a little bit of I think the author does okay with that romance kind of angle, sometimes better than others.
Yeah.
Because there was a couple of times, like with Des Johnny and Blackjack Gary, where it just seemed to come pretty suddenly.
Yeah.
And then it was kind of retroactively put in there. And I think with Iceni and Dracon in The Lost Stars, it was better done.
That was my feeling.
Because we got to see both sides, and we got to see it build up.
Mm-hmm.
And
we saw the trust being earned. We saw the relationship being formed.
Whereas here, with Des Johnny and Ochoa, it feels like we skipped over that formative stage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, suddenly they realize they care for each other and we're there.
Yeah.
And I get the short engagement cycle in this sort of a world where you don't know if the planet's going to be around 6 months from now.
They're a couple and they don't know it at the beginning of the book. And Locken and Bridget are they're a couple and they don't know it at the end of the book.
Yeah. Well, but even last book, when we got this Johnny and stuff, I didn't really feel kind of the sparks fly.
He was too briefly there.
Exactly. So I don't think that's the author's really forte. He's a military man, the military stuff he does better with. I think this is a fun book. It's a good read.
I think he creates community fairly well.
Well, I think he's doing a better job of that in this book than probably a lot of the others.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of characters. We're getting a sense of what's going on in a few different worlds, and we can see how it's going to start to build together.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in The Lost Fleet, we never left Gary's side.
Yeah.
So we were seeing the world building through his eyes, which isn't a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly here, we're bouncing between various perspectives a lot more. I think it's a little bit smoother handoff than maybe in some of the other books we've read, like Lost Stars, where it's like, wait, who are we with now?
Yeah.
Because there'd be, in that book, a couple of times where you'd get a few pages into the section before it was revealed.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying this. I'm curious how the series of books would read if you had started with Genesis Fleet and then went to...
Yeah.
Again, don't know that I'd recommend that.
I wouldn't.
But it's an option. Mm-hmm. Because some people may discover these books first.
I think their strength comes as a prequel read afterwards. I think you get a lot more depth and richness.
There's an entire layer you lose if you read these first, because just Johnny is just this Johnny, Gary is just Gary. You don't realize mm-hmm. that, you know, 100 plus years hence, their kids are great-grandkids or whatever.
There are so many quips that seem like throwaways that have meaning.
Yes, you don't get that additional layer of meaning, the nobody will do that or what would happen if
yeah.
comments, knowing that does happen, that doesn't happen, or this is how it plays out.
Yeah.
So, it's a fun read. Pretty quick read.
Yes.
I've had some novels where it's like plodding to get through it, and this is very much it's not a page turner where you just flip because there's nothing there, but it's at that right balance of there's enough happening on the page and enough momentum to keep you going to the next page and mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah.
So, we've got one more after this, Triumphant.
That sounds right. Which kind of sets expectations.
Yeah. This is first Vanguard, then they ascend, and then they triumph.
I mean, I'm trying to think of the title you didn't want for that third book.
Disaster. Trying to think what would be a glorious defeat.
I mean, you know, Triumphant sets expectations.
It would be... very, more than frustrating, it'd be aggravating if we got to the end of this and realized the other worlds take over, this is part of Syndic thing, and boom, it was all for nothing, it's some other Gary and just Johnny, you know.
Well, and if it weren't for the fact that I remember Gary being from Glen Lyon and just Johnny being from Kosaka, I could give that to you.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you don't do a series of novels and then end with Scorched Earth.
And then end with still needing to build.
I guess my point is, if you do a Scorched Earth and all these characters are kind of toast, what's to drive us to the next book?
Yeah.
And again, the question I have is there a next book on the horizon of this series?
I'm curious. Yeah, because it's such a rich universe.
Oh yeah, there's tons more they could do, tons more I think they should do, and I'd like to see them explore it.
And I don't think he's really touched on who bombarded the planet last book.
No, because that seemed to have fallen by the wayside. I still take it as the Enigmas.
Okay. It's a valid theory.
But I think they need to do a little more there in the next book, at least touch on something there, and a little bit more on the lights and either setting the scene of maybe there's yet another alien race
mm-hmm.
yet to be discovered 100 years hence.
Well, and I mean, frankly, another series could be less military, more scientific.
It would be interesting to do a survey type stuff. Because there was a mention that Melee had of wanting to do surveys.
Yes.
Planetary, but still.
But still.
Some sort of mapping out of space into known space.
Yeah.
Would be fun. So anything else on this one?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.